This is the Tom Likas Show.
I didn't even feel no pressure. I didn't feel no pressure.
And now, from the New Normal Studios in Burbank.
Shit. Okay, that's cool.
Tom Likas.
Thank you for tuning into the Tom Likas Show. From the New Normal Studios in Burbank, this is where you hear us live Monday through Friday, 3 p.m. Pacific Time, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 24-7 at tom.show. You can hear us on our free app. Get it at the App Store. Get it at Google Play. Or do what 24,000 other listeners have done. Get it at tomeverywhere.com. Thank you for tuning in. Thanks for being part of the program. We appreciate it. A bonus hour now of the Tom Likas Show. Yeah, we're running a little behind schedule, but that happens. When you get a hater on the Tom Likas Show, you've got to grab that opportunity. Got to.
We love the haters.
We love the haters. People think we're afraid of the haters. We give the haters all the time they need. If you know what I mean. Anyway, this is a bonus hour of the Tom Likas Show, and as we are every Tuesday, we are joined by criminal defense attorney Adam Sachs. Adam, good to see you.
Great to see you, Tom. How you doing?
All right. What's going on?
I like the haters. That's good.
Who doesn't?
You used to do an hour where you'd have all the critics and criticizers call.
Yep.
Remember that?
People who hate my guts. That's how I used to put it.
That was my favorite.
Yep.
So I was talking last week about philosophy. In terms of family law, and to be fair to criminal law, I wanted to talk a little bit this week about that as well. You know, the United States is pretty out of control. We have more people in jail per capita than anywhere in the world, more than China, more than repressive countries, and we consider ourselves to be, you know, a democracy, of course, and we love freedom and liberty, but we've got almost 2 million people in jail, and our jails, you know, they say it's horrible to be in a Turkish prison or whatever. I'm sure that's true, but U.S. jails are pretty horrible also, and there's all kinds of stories of abuse and murder and certainly rape. This is something that people don't talk about that much, but, you know, more men in the United States get raped than women. Did you know that, Tom?
No.
And they always
talk
about rape,
right?
Well,
when you look at the prison population, that shouldn't be surprising, I guess.
Right, right. Well, so they say, well, a woman gets raped by, you know, some guy who, you know, jumps out of a bush or someone that she's dating or something, and guys get raped in jail, but somehow that means they deserve it, but that's not true. I mean, if you go to jail, you're supposed to serve your sentence and be released, you know? When you talk about, you know, paying your debt to society and so forth, we really have a big problem with this now. There's a whole thing of overcrowding. For example, where we are in Los Angeles, if you get sentenced to 30 days or 60 days or 90 days, which you don't go to a prison, you know, you just go to like the local jail in your county, you're not going to serve that. No way. They're way too overcrowded. You'll be out in a couple of days. I mean, seriously, if you get 60 days, it would be remarkable if you serve more than 2 or 3 days. And they just let you out because they don't know what else to do with you. This is a really weird thing, Tom, but there was, for some reason, some guy came into my office building in Van Nuys last year and kicked down my door. I don't think he even knew who I was or anything. It's just one of those random things.
Really?
Yeah. He kicked down my door, and then he went into my office, and he fell asleep on the floor. He didn't steal anything. So it was like breaking and entering and vandalism or whatever. And then he was put into, you know, he was arrested and he's put into jail. And his court date came up about 10 days later. And the judge sentenced him to time served. So he served the 10 days already and they let him go. And that's very common because, you know, they don't know what else to do. And in our priority, in our society, the people that get the longest sentences are all connected to particularly drug crimes. Possession of heroin or cocaine or whatever. And that's just unbelievable. You know, the truth is you can commit one murder in your life. And if you do it in a way that, you know, wasn't particularly premeditated and you can get it down to manslaughter, you could be out of jail in 6 or 7 years. That's not bad for a murder. Unbelievable.
Well, look what happened in Germany. Of course, Germany had its own laws and stuff, but there was the guy who set his pregnant girlfriend on fire.
Unbelievable.
And he's going to be in prison less time than he would have been paying child support.
Yeah, well, there you go. And a lot of the Scandinavian countries try to experiment with, like, open jails. And you've seen some of these jails. I saw jails in Sweden and whatnot. They look like dormitories, essentially, you know, and you're allowed to wear your own clothes and make your own food. And, you know, this kind of emphasizing what's going to happen to you when you get out of jail. You know, England, where our laws are based, you know, and Canadian laws as well, you know, England had a thing that every felony was punishable by death. So there was no proportionality to it. So essentially, if you were arrested for stealing a loaf of bread, right, that's the classic story, that was the death sentence, you know? And so the idea of having some kind of connection to the severity of the crime and the severity of the punishment is a modern idea. But if you think about it, you know, with the exception of things like, you know, the death sentence, most people that go to jail are going to go in for a number of years and be released. And when they get released, the problem is they're going to be even more screwed up than when they went in. I mean, they're going to have horrible experiences in jail. They're going to get raped, beaten up. They're going to be in gangs. They're going to take drugs. They actually may graduate from jail as a much more hardened criminal than when they went in. And if you look at certain communities in terms of minorities, Hispanics and blacks are much, much more likely to end up in jail. And if you look at some of the cultural things in terms of California, Los Angeles, I've read statistics that 1 in 3 or 1 in 4 black males, you know, 18 to 35, are in the criminal justice system in some way. So they're either in jail or they're on probation or they have a case pending. And I mean, that's horrible. That's just unbelievable. It's unacceptable as a society, especially a free society. People should be really upset about it. Now, this is an interesting thing. In the past couple of weeks, as an experiment, I went to an anger management class. And this is something that the people don't even know about this stuff. But Tom and I have talked about this in the context particularly of DUI. You know, literally, the state doesn't know what to do with you. There are these social problems and pathologies and crime that just exist and have always existed, and no one knows how to stamp them out. And one of the things with DUI people is if you're convicted of a DUI, very often the judge will sentence you to go to DUI classes or to go to 12-step programs like Alcoholics Anonymous, which by its very nature was supposed to be voluntary. The whole idea of Alcoholics Anonymous, which was started by you know, Bill W., was that you would meet with other alcoholics and you would talk about it, you know, about your experiences and so forth, and help each other. So now we have a whole different thing where a judge tells you you have to go to AA and he gives you a number. You've got to go to 30 sessions or 52 sessions, a whole year or twice a week or whatever it is. And that really, you know, kind of changes the whole nature of it on its head where you're compelled to go. And we've talked about how there's a cottage industry of classes in domestic violence and so forth and parenting classes. And there are people that are psychologists that teach all these things. And so when you get involved in different kinds of crimes that are related to anger and violence, you know, domestic violence, there are classes about anger management. And I went to one last week. And, you know, it's fascinating. You see how, you know, kind of desperate they are in a way, that the government doesn't know what to do with you. And if they lock you up, that's not going to necessarily make you better. And if you pay fines, you know, people pay fines, that's big money for the government, but that doesn't necessarily make you better. And they put you in, you know, these worlds now, and you look at the results, and this is something that Tom and I have always talked about, that this generation now is the first generation to really be the offspring, particularly men, of single mothers. And you see that in these classes where these young guys who grew up without fathers don't know how to be men. They just don't. They don't understand it. They've never had a role model. You know, on some level, if you look at human beings, whatever we are primates, and we're like apes, you know, of an advanced nature. And part of our evolution is to learn by repetition and imitation. So when you think about a young man doesn't know how to be a man, of course, how would he know? He's looking at his father. And if he doesn't have a father, and he doesn't have uncles, and he doesn't have any men around at all, and then he turns on television, and television is one big vagina, he looks at the whole culture, and he doesn't understand how to act as a man. And so when he gets into circumstances later on in his life, and he doesn't like what his girlfriend is doing, he sets her on fire. He doesn't know a middle ground. And one of the things that they were trying to talk to us about in this anger class was how to communicate with people, how to get your point across, but to not be hostile, and just things that, you know, are so crazy to have to sit there and explain. But, you know, these are things that literally have been lost in the culture. And, you know, one of the things that I try to do when I help people is I try to get them, you know, to have to take classes rather than go to jail, or to pay fines rather than to go to jail and so forth, or to reduce sentences or whatever, to try to make compromises. And these are things that the prosecutors really like. They want you to go to classes. They think that that's terrific. But I really wonder, you know, how much this does for you when you resent it. You know, going to AA on your own because you think you have a problem is definitely something that is going to be much more beneficial to you than somebody making you go to AA, such as your wife insisting that you go or nagging you, or much worse, if a court orders you to go, which is threatening, which means that if you don't go, then you're in contempt of court and you're going to have legal problems and so forth. And that takes away the whole nature of it. And I think that when someone is forced to do something, it always creates anger and resentment. You know, Tom, I'm reminded very much of when you had your little domestic violence nonsense, and they made you take classes, right?
They did. I'd take it for 6 months.
But you've always spoken about that with disdain.
Right.
That it wasn't fair.
Right.
So did they really reach in there and make a whole new Tom for us?
I don't think they cared about that. It's my understanding that there was a like a private company. It could have been a non-profit corporation, or it could just be a for-profit corporation.
That, some of them are, by the way.
Yeah. They rent a space in an industrial park somewhere, or a mall, second floor of a mall out of that unrented space. They bring you in there, and in the case of domestic violence, they have some hardcore Diesel Dyke, who was the teacher of the course.
Now, is she even a psychologist, or who even knows, right?
They give you the curriculum vitae before they start. No, they just get in there and start telling you what a piece of shit you are, and, you know, you're likely a drug addict, or you're likely an alcoholic, this and that. And I'm sitting in there with guys who are true, hardcore, balls-to-the-wall cholos, who are there with every kind of gang tattoo, and I'm sitting there, me, you know, just
average white guy,
just you know, I got sentenced here. In other words, and by the way, all I was trying to do was avoid going to trial, so I didn't have to live in Boston another 6 months.
Right, of course,
because I wanted to get to L.A. to start my new gig. So I said, you know what? Fuck it. I'll just...
Well, it's a deal that your lawyer made.
I'll come in 7:30 a.m. on Saturday for 6 months. Every week, I will pay. I will keep receipts for every appearance I made. And after 6 months, it goes away. And then towards the end of my run there, the Diesel Dyke teacher tells me and everyone there, you know, that first goes around the circle and asks, did you do what you were accused of doing? Did you do it? Did you do it? Some people said yes. Some people said no. Some people said, I don't remember. I was drunk, whatever. I said no. I didn't do it.
Uh-oh, wrong answer.
That's when I was told that she could keep me there literally forever. And until I admit what I did, I wasn't going to get out. See, so I had to lie and say I did it.
So the two questions I have then, okay, and this is really the central point of what I'm saying. First of all, it didn't help you because you're just totally being bullshit.
Well, first of all, I'm not a violent person. And
no, but I mean, so you
as
it,
my
it was 23 unjust.
Years of as my 23 years
yeah, yeah.
of my record attests.
Since then,
since then that wasn't me. It isn't me. It was never me. Okay, how could it possibly do any good?
Right.
All it did was make me more cynical about the system as a whole.
Okay, so there's fraud number one. Now, the people that you're referring to that were in the class with you, that you these sleazy people, Do you think that it helped any of them? Could it even have?
I don't think so. I don't think so. Because, again, by the way, that's not to say that therapy isn't a good thing. I think it's fantastic.
We've talked about this, though,
this
right?
was not therapy.
Isn't it a kind of therapy, group therapy?
First of all, I'm not convinced I was being talked to by a professional counselor, A. And B, I don't think it does any good to sit in a room with other people and have this conversation. I spent 9 years in therapy, all of it years after this experience.
And this is individual you're talking
about. Individual therapy. And it had nothing to do with that because the incident didn't happen. Did I have marital problems? You bet I did. Did I talk about them in therapy? Yes. Did therapy help me figure out how to leave a bad situation that I didn't get out of? Yes, I credit it 100%. It was one of the greatest things I ever did for myself. But the 6 months of Saturday mornings at 7:30 a.m. in Van Nuys that I wasted with this corporation that brought in some professional lesbian to beat the shit out of us, that did nothing. Nothing. And I'll say it right on the record, 22 years later, I lied to get out. I said I did it, and
right,
I didn't.
Right. See, it seems like the criminal justice system now, the only word I can really use is that it's essentially overwhelmed. Okay? Now, I don't know. People say things are worse than ever or something. I don't know if that's really true. I think that there's always been pathology in relationships and families. People have always, hit each other and gotten in arguments and just being a human being and going through life. You know, you go into a bar, you step on someone's foot by accident, you bump into someone, they bump into you. There's a certain amount of tolerance that we have to have towards one another. And you see how some people are more likely to, let it slide, and some people freak out, That's based on temperament or your childhood or whatever. And, I mean, you were talking about this guy last hour who lit the girlfriend on fire or whatever. I mean, that is something that obviously is sick. It's horrible. But when you think about the kind of men that women choose, they get themselves with a psychopath. They get pregnant by the psychopath. And then this little woman, 4'11", is telling him, I'm having your baby and there's nothing you can do about it and screw you and I'm going to take your money and whatever. And somehow or another, I mean, guys don't realize, somehow that facing this, the possibility that the woman is doing this, it's amazing that these murders don't happen a lot more often. Guys are pretty restrained. And when you look at how society is trying to cope with these things, there are a lot of guys that I have gotten off on DUIs and so forth, and they get, relatively slap on the wrist or nothing at all, get it dismissed, let's say. And I feel like I did a good job, and I'm happy about it. And then they call me about 2-3 months later, and they've gotten another DUI. So they didn't really, learn anything.
Well, I mean, I can speak to that because, if you live in Los Angeles, we have listeners all over the world, but if you live in Los Angeles, you know at least one person who's gotten a DUI. And
of course.
And in most cases, multiple people, or people who've had multiple DUIs. And here is what I've been told by every... I'm an Uber rider. I'm not a drunk driver, folks. I do like to party, and I do take Uber. That's what I do. But here's the deal. When I have talked to people who have been through these classes sponsored by the state of California, most of these classes are taught by what are called recovering alcoholics. And I have heard multiple stories, and it's the same story every time. The drunk teaching the class steps up there and he says, "You're all here for a reason. You all were arrested for DUI. And I'm here to tell you, as a recovering alcoholic myself, you didn't have to be here, folks. You did not have to be here. If you were not driving in the passing lane, and you were drunk, if you were just keep it a little more slow into the extreme right lane, chances are we wouldn't be sitting here having this conversation. If you were not driving with the window wide, all the windows in your car wide open." He started giving like a list of tips on how to get away
arrested,
with drunk.
Yeah.
So the education you were getting was, here's how you're going to get away with it next time. And that boggled my mind. Like, the state sentences you to attend a class where the guy teaching the class says, look, you idiot, if you had done it right, you wouldn't be sitting here.
So that presupposes that, of course, you're going to continue drinking and driving. You just got to be smarter.
By the way,
it.
It's my opinion that the state of California wants you to continue drinking and driving because they want to keep you in that system. They want to keep you paying fees. They want to keep you paying fines. They want to keep you paying more insurance. They want to keep you paying more taxes. They want to keep you coming to these classes where I believe they sometimes charge you more if you're a repeat offender. That's what they want. Because the reality is, if they wanted to stop drunk driving, they could do it today by telling you, mandatory you're in prison for your first offense, mandatory loss of license, and another year in prison for the second offense, and third offense, mandatory lifetime ban, you can't drive in California ever again.
Great.
And 5 years in prison, guaranteed.
So we go from having 2 million people in jail in America to 10 million people.
No, because you know what? I think the reason people still drive drunk in California with all the checkpoints and all of the public service announcements is because everybody knows somebody who's been through the system. And the system is designed for recidivism. It's designed to encourage you to go back and try it again. Because you're never going to prison. You're never going forever. You will always get another shot again. I mean, I read about one guy. I couldn't believe this story. One guy who had 16 convictions.
Yeah,
and is out there. Now he's got a suspended license. But the point is, what's he doing walking amongst us? 16 convictions.
All right, so he's an animal. What are you going to do?
No, but the point I'm making is everybody sees these stories, and they know that you're not going to spend much time in prison for driving drunk unless you kill somebody. You're not going to spend much time.
You're going to do that sooner or later, right?
What?
You're going to kill somebody. It's just a matter of
mathematics,
right?
Well, some do, some don't. The point is that I think people who play chicken with these things, people who keep doing it over and over, they have read the stories and they know that people, they get off scot-free, or they get off, they pay $10,000 in fines and fees and they pay increased insurance, but they come out and they're still walking amongst us free. And they know it's the roll of the dice. You get caught, you don't get caught.
See, I think that the big problem that society has is what to do. And like I said, the English had a thing where, you know, whatever you did, you got the death sentence. That's not right. And then we have a thing where, like you're talking about, that you got your 10th DUI and you're getting a slap on the wrist. So the question is, how can we deal with things? And this is where these classes come in. Because you're basically being sent to communist re-education. They're taking you in and they're trying to teach you the things that your parents didn't teach you. You know, when I do cases of child abuse, they send people to parenting classes. And, I mean, this is astounding. They literally send you, and I've seen the curriculums and the books, and they say to this, you know, theoretically this is a woman or a man who has a young child, it's better not to yell at a child. It's better not to hit a child. It's better to discuss with a child on their level and understanding how to do things correctly. I mean, it's unbelievable that needs to be said. You know, that needs to be spelled out
and
stated.
What makes anyone think that the state of California knows anything about that?
Well, that's the whole joke of it, Tom.
Right.
I mean, if you had a father when you were growing up, if you had a normal life, you would have known these things instinctively. But it seems like on some level we've become less and less human. We don't know how to behave. We don't know how to act with other people. We don't know how to eat. We don't know how to take care of ourselves. We don't know how to live with our neighbors. We don't know how to date. I mean, look at all these guys that call you, Tom, that have this crazy girlfriend and doing all kinds of crazy stuff. And what do? Marry her. They get her pregnant. It's like, you got to be kidding me. You have every reason, every indication, every red flag to know that you should run the other way. And I remember a really great routine with Chris Rock, where he was talking about not getting arrested and not having the police beat you up. And he was saying that you should think about laws as hints. You know, this is like, you probably shouldn't do that, you know. And I mean, you think people in the normal life when their friends are doing something crazy or whatever, they don't realize this is really screwed up. I better get out of here. I mean, they stick around to find out what's coming. You know, I mean, it's absurd. And the opposite side of what ends up happening is that people end up going into these things, and I think personally that it's a fraud. And they look at it cynically. They go through the legal system, and they are very cynical about how it works. I've been in court many times with clients who looked at me and said, you know, Adam, this is like a casino. You know, the way things are, deals being made, you know, this whole drama in the situation. They say, this reminds me of a casino, except instead of, you know, money or chips or whatever, we're gambling with people's lives and people's futures. And a lot of people come out of the criminal justice system. I've talked to a lot of people that also even just did jury duty. And they come out and they say, what a bunch of crap. What a joke. How absurd. The justice system is a complete farce. And, you know, that's sad. That's really unfortunate. And when you talk about the cynicism of someone like you who is compelled to take classes or someone who is compelled to take AA, you know, you're not going to go there and have a good experience and say, yes, you know, I'm really glad I took that anger class or the DUI class. It really taught me a lot, and I really calmed down and whatever. It's just the opposite.
Well,
you're
beyond
say
that,
it's crap.
AA requires a pledging, a belief in a so-called higher power.
Yeah.
I don't even see how it can be constitutional to compel someone to attend a class where they must say they believe in a higher power.
Yeah, yeah.
How can that even be legal?
Well, it's a cult in a way. I mean, if you think about
that, that's a whole other story. But any kind of reference to a supreme being or some higher power or God, how can that be legal for a judge to force you to go there?
Well, if you think about how much trouble they've carried on about having just the motto "In God We Trust" on money, right? I mean, that wasn't added until the 1950s, right?
Right.
And that's something that a lot of atheists have fought against and said it's not fair. And used to have, like, of course, prayer in school and so forth. But it is true that you can have a judge order you to go to AA, and you're supposed to give over your life to a higher power.
Right.
You're supposed to.
Who is that, the state of California?
The governor. You know, they're talking, obviously, about God. It's maybe not the Christian God or the Muslim God or whatever, but there is some certain religious aspect to it. But, you know, the biggest question I would have is that if you're going to AA, not voluntarily, but because you have to go, and it's not a joke. You have to go, otherwise you're going to go to jail. So it's not just an idle kind of threat or, you know, like they're not being like, oh, please go. If you don't go, you go to jail. And if that's the story and you're literally prescribed, like, you know, 30 pills or whatever, they say you have to take 30 sessions. And you have to go and whatever, maybe certain classes, not AA, but other classes you have to pay for. You know, is this something that's really beneficial? And I'd have to say probably it's not. That most people are going to be cynical and resentful and see the whole system as bullshit. And if the whole system doesn't serve the people in any way, then it's completely dysfunctional. If you look at the way it is meted out and the way it falls now, in a lot of ways, we have debtor's prison. And the people that I see, not my clients, but average people that don't have any money, that come to court without a lawyer, they get screwed. They get the highest sentences. They get fines that they cannot afford to pay. And then if they don't pay it, they end up going to jail. People that have money post bail, so they don't have to spend time in jail. People that don't have money go to jail and get screwed. And the whole system is really, really upside down, and it's not getting better. It's actually getting worse. If you look at the things now, things are stricter. There's more and more laws suggested now for greater range of things and domestic violence to make that stricter and to make it more comprehensive. And, you know, everyone's completely hysterical. And you really see that our society, on some terrible level, is breaking down. And it's fundamental level, and that's really, really sad. And I've talked, obviously, about family law a lot and also criminal law, but you see how they intersect, where some guy gets in a disagreement with his wife, and she's angry at him, and she calls the police, and then he ends up going to jail, and now it's a criminal matter, and meanwhile he's losing custody of his kids, he loses his job, he's got restraining orders against him, he has to take all his savings to pay a lawyer, and then he goes on trial, maybe he loses the trial. I mean, it's absolutely unbelievable. And this is something that cannot be functioning and cannot be healthy in a democratic society. And that's one of the reasons, as people see around us, our society is melting down. You know, Tom, there's no way to explain the rise of Donald Trump, okay? I'm sorry. It shows that our society is really troubled, that people are trying to find answers. And you have someone like him who is, you know, giving basically sort of, you know, simple solutions, you know. You know, fuck the Mexicans, we'll build a wall, you know, we'll do this, we'll throw out the Arabs, yeah, you know. And people are really having an appetite for stuff like that now because the perception is that things are so screwed up and so out of control that you need someone like, you know, just to fix everything. And that, unfortunately, in the past in history, has often led to some very, very bad results. That's where a lot of the horrible things that we've had, like fascism, that's where they were rooted. I'm not saying Trump is a fascist, but the idea of simple solutions and get tough and, you know, things that, you know, are like don't really analyze things, just this one sentence thing to solve a complex problem, that is where society really, really suffers. And as I've said, the punishments and the price fall on the bottom level, the people that are the weakest, the poor.
Yeah, no doubt about it. We're going to take a break here. And we're going to come back. We've got callers here. Adam Sachs is here with a brand spanking new edition of our bonus hour. Adam Sachs is here as criminal defense attorney Adam Sachs. If you have got questions for Adam, Adam will give you free legal advice right now. But all you have to do is call us here right now. 901-3000-TOM. That's the telephone number. 901-3000-TOM to talk to Adam Sachs right now. There is an opening on the board for you to get in at 901-3000-866.
Free at TomEverywhere.com. Download the Tom Likas app now. 901-3000-TOM. This is the Tom Likas Show.
It's the Tom Likas Show. The bonus hour at 901-3000-TOM. That's our telephone number. 901-3000-TOM to talk to criminal defense attorney Adam Sachs. 901-3000-866. Here's Brent in Mesa, Arizona. Brent, you're on the Tom Likas Show, the bonus hour with Adam Sachs.
Hey, Tom. Adam.
Hey, Brent. What's up?
Oh, I'm not in trouble, but
good.
I watch a lot of true crime shows, and I frequently see detectives ask a suspect to voluntarily give a DNA sample, you know, to be cleared or not.
Right.
And frequently they do it. And my question is, if they are cleared, what happens to that DNA profile? Is it discarded or is it entered into a database?
International database, my friend. Welcome to 1984.
Wow.
Now, one of the things that police use on you, of course, is psychology. And one of their main things is the psychology of dominance, where they have what they call the police presence, which means that as a police officer is standing next to you, you're supposed to be afraid. You know, he's a figure of authority. And even if he's talking courteously to you, which he should be, he's not just asking. He's telling you what to do. Now, we're all innocent until proven guilty. That's the presumption of innocence. But what police will say to you is, look, we'd like you to give fingerprints, or we'd like you to give a DNA sample so that we can rule you out. We can clear your name. And listen, I don't need to give you a DNA sample to clear my name. My name is already clear. You follow me?
Yes.
And the idea that, you know, we're starting to have these major databases. The FBI, for example, has that and these other databases. There's a thing called the Five Eyes, which is the echelon system, which is the five major English-speaking countries, which is the United States, Canada, England, Australia, and New Zealand. And these are countries that gather intelligence all over the world with listening posts and listen to phone conversations, and they share the information with each other. And if you're giving DNA samples to the police or to the FBI and so forth, these samples are going to be kept on these computers forever. And you could be attached to a crime that you had nothing to do with. One of the most famous examples, and I have mentioned this before, is back after 9/11, there was a major terrorist attack in Spain on commuter trains. And many, many people were killed, and they were able to lift a fingerprint off of one of the pieces of the bomb. They actually recovered the bomb. Like when a bomb explodes, they can pull the pieces together and try to recreate the device. And they got some kind of a fingerprint off, and it turned out to match a guy who was a lawyer who lived in Washington State. And they arrested him and put him in jail, even though he had nothing to do with it. He had never been to Spain. He was not in Spain at the time when the bombing happened, but they were absolutely sure that they had a fingerprint match. And that just shows you that DNA matches and fingerprint matches are not infallible. And you can see what happened in the O.J. case. You know, O.J. Simpson's blood matched, and in the end, the jury did not believe it. And that's being portrayed on that that TV show about the O.J. case. So when you're talking about, I don't know exactly what your story is, but when you're talking about these TV shows and they say, okay, look, we want to rule out all the family, so we need to get DNA samples from everybody, you know, you've got to think very carefully. I've given fingerprints many times when I had to get professional licenses, for example, my law license. And, you know, those prints are in a computer somewhere. And I could end up finding myself inadvertently and accidentally matched to a crime that I had nothing to do with because of lousy lab procedures and stupidity. And I think that these are private things. I don't think you should be giving your DNA to anybody. And I'm very suspicious of trusting the government. And they tell us, oh, don't worry. You know, it's these government police agencies, they're very honest and they're very careful. But I think that's bullshit, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, it seems like the detectives always insist you have no reason to not give it if you're innocent.
Well, that's absolutely true, but you're always innocent. And if you're guilty and you know you're guilty, there's even more reason not to give it. Seriously. I mean, you know, let them get a court order. I will give you my DNA sample when I have to, when the judge tells me I have to do it. And if you don't have probable cause, then you can kiss my ass. It's the same thing when the police knock on your door and they say, is it okay if we search your house? You know, we want to rule you out. We want to clear your name. And you say, no, it's not okay for you to search my house. I'm sorry. Something about the Fourth Amendment, you know? What was that?
Somebody's having a conversation with them.
Well, anyway, I hope I answered your question.
Yes, thank you. I love this segment, guys. Thanks.
Thanks very much. I
thank
appreciate
you.
That.
Appreciate the call. 901-3000 Tom. That's
what did he say?
I don't know.
I love.
I love Adam a lot.
No, it's something else. He's talking about the wife. Was saying, "Who are you talking to? Who is that?" 901-3000 Tom, we're here with Adam Sachs. This is the bonus hour. It's Kenny in Alhambra. Kenny, you're on the Tom Likas show with Adam. Hello.
How's it going, Tom? Hey, how are you doing, Adam?
Very well.
I have a question, man. I'm on parole, right? Now, my question is, the other day we got stopped, and when I say we, myself and a person that was actually driving the vehicle, and I was asked by the cops for my ID. Now, we had just come back from playing basketball, so I didn't carry my ID. I didn't really even carry the wallet.
No, wait a second. You said you were on a motorcycle?
No. We were in a car. We were in a moving vehicle.
But you weren't driving?
No, sir. I was not driving.
Okay.
Now,
so why did they pull the car over?
Actually, that's the funny thing. He didn't state at the moment why he was pulling us over. It turned out to be because, I guess, the person I was riding with had a California stop, you know, pretty much. Stop for us half a second.
You
kept
roll,
going, you know,
roll
so.
Through a stop sign?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. So, I mean, so, you know, that's, you know, within limited abilities, it's okay for the police to pull him over then.
No. That's not my question. My question is, do I have to give him my ID when he asks me for an ID, seeing as like a vehicle is being stopped but not me specifically?
Right. I see what you mean. You know, there's a I understand. There's a lot of questions about this. What they call routine traffic stops. You have a routine traffic stop. Very often the cop will say, I'd like to look into the trunk, you know. of the car. And most people just let them do it, and you know, you don't have to do that. Normally the cop is able to see what is in plain view. So if he looks in the car, he's allowed to take the license of the driver, obviously. You know, they ask for your license and your registration. He looks in the car, and if he doesn't see, like, for example, drugs, you know, on the carpet or the floor in plain view, he has no reason, which is called probable cause, to look in the glove compartment or to look in the trunk, etc. Now, when they're looking at the passengers, they're trying to get a totality of circumstances. If he thinks that maybe you guys are, you know, driving away from a crime, or maybe there's a DUI case or something like this, he may look at you as a passenger and try to see, you know, your face, if you have a torn jacket, if you're bleeding from your you know, nose or something, or if something's strange about you. Maybe he heard that stereo had been stolen and you've got a stereo on your lap, you know. But normally speaking, if everything's relatively normal, there's no reason for the cop to ask for your ID. And people will tend to cooperate, but you can say, "Officer, I really don't want to give you my ID. I haven't done anything."
Well, that's see, it. I did tell him that. I told him that, and what he said is, I was in a vehicle that was being stopped, so therefore I needed to provide him with my ID. Mm-hmm. Now, my problem is, I'm on parole, and I don't really want the cops around here knowing where I live.
Well, I don't know.
You know,
I understand. I don't know why you're on parole. But you should know that when you're on parole, your rights are limited. You're not. I think you're not supposed to refuse any request from a peace officer. Maybe that is normally one of the conditions of your parole, right?
That's what I was calling. I was hoping you would know this.
Well, normally that's the case. Also, for example, I think they can search your house, right, without a warrant.
Yes, yes. I'm pretty much all my rights have been fucked.
Right.
Giving up, you know. I understand that part. Now it's part. That. My only question was, am I obligated to show him my ID before he knows I'm on parole? See what I'm saying?
Normally, a lot of cops will say to you, "Are you on parole? Or do you have any warrants?" Right. That's a classic thing for cops to say.
Oh yes.
Anyone here on parole? Do you have any warrants? You know, anything I should know? So you,
yes.
I think you may be obligated to inform him. I don't know what you're on parole for, but this is, you know, one of the tragedies of being convicted of a crime is that a lot of your constitutional rights are taken away from you. That's one of the reasons that I've always encouraged people, once parole is over, to do an expungement, because, you know, that wipes away your crime. That's something that I love to do for people. I'd be happy to do that for you in the future. And then the second question is, why are you on parole? I don't know what the case was, but again, a lot of people don't fight things. They say, the hell with it, I'm just going to plead guilty. They get a public defender or whatever, which is the same basically, and they don't realize that it has these big repercussions and implications in their life where they're on parole for several years and they've lost a lot of their civil rights. I mean, that doesn't feel good, right?
Not at all.
What are you on parole for? What happened? You had a crime before?
Yes, I committed a crime maybe like about 6-7 years ago. I actually got out about a year ago.
You've been on parole wait a second. You're on parole for 7 years?
No. I committed a crime about 6 or 7 years ago, and I've been out about a year.
So how much more parole do you have?
Hopefully sometime by the end of this year, I'll be able to get off.
Okay.
But it all depends on the board and everybody.
See, I think it's very unfair. If you think about you, and you know, I don't know exactly the story, but if you went to jail and you paid your debt to society, now that you're free again, you should be allowed to live your life. Why should you have this cloud hanging over you anymore? And, you know, if I'm trying to hire you, you tell me, oh, yeah, man, I'm on parole. I mean, maybe I'm not going to hire you, right? That's not fair.
That happens a lot.
No, but how, in other words, how are you able to restart your life? It's just unreasonable, I think.
And that's the fucked up cycle that happens here, is because all these doors are closed up because we are criminals convicted of prior mistakes. We've all paid our debt to society, and
right.
I think we should all just, you know, somehow try to reintegrate us into society rather than just trying to push us away. Because this is what it does. It's just a fucking vicious cycle, man. They go out, these guys get out, and then every door is closed for them. So what do they do? They go back to what they were used to.
Well,
this is exactly
what I was talking about at the top of the hour, and I really feel for you. And that's why, like I said, when you're off parole in another couple of months, contact me about an expungement, okay?
I'll glad you call you, Matt. I really do appreciate your time. Thank you very much, Tom. I appreciate it.
No problem, Kenny. I'll put you on hold. And Dino will put you in touch with Adam so you can talk to him.
See, he's talking
about,
Tom, that, you know, if everyone gets the death sentence for every felony, then they're gone. But if a guy goes to jail for a couple of years, you know, okay, so whatever he did, he went to jail, he paid his debt. He gets out, and now he's on lists, he's on parole, he's on these Megan's lists, you know, sex offender lists. He can't function normally in his life, and if all the doors are slammed in his face, and he can't get a license, he can't get a job.
Probably reoffend.
What else? What the hell else is he going to do?
Right?
He's
going
to go back to crime, obviously. Sure, even if he has the best intention of all.
Imagine if hockey was done that way. So you get 5 minutes for fighting, then you get back into the game, but you're on double secret probation. Can't even imagine that.
I don't think the game would go very well.
No, probably not. We'll take a break here. When we come back, we'll tell you how you can get in touch with Adam. I think you got another call or two here.
Fabulous.
At 901-3000 Tom. It's Adam Sachs, criminal defense attorney Adam Sachs. 901-3000 Tom for free legal advice right now at 901-3000. 866.
The entire Tom Likas experience in your pants.
Get the app now.
901-3000 Tom. This is the Tom Likas Show.
It's the Tom Likas Show from the New Normal Studios in Burbank. Adam, how can people get in touch with you?
Well, you can call me toll free. 1-800-340-7320. That's 1-800-340-7320. Check out my website, www.adamlawyer.com. Check me on Facebook, of course, and send me an email. I read them and I answer them myself, adam@adamlawyer.com.
Let's go to Tom in Santa Clarita. Tom, you're on with Adam. Hello.
Hello, how you guys doing?
Hey, Tom.
Doing great.
Good. Hey, I got a question for Adam.
Sure.
When you guys started, you were talking about DUIs and everything.
Right.
And I got a DUI. It was probably like 7 years ago.
Okay.
But it was on federal land at Lake Mead.
Okay.
And when I went through the process, it never showed up on the insurance in California. It never showed up on anything because the federal government said they don't recognize the state laws.
Okay.
Why is the federal government different than the state?
Okay. Well, we have
on
a
issue.
I understand. We have a federal system, as you know, that wasn't always going to be clear. You know, at one time the states were all separate. And they kind of had this loose union. And over time, we made a federal central government, which at first was pretty weak. But over time, it's become stronger and stronger and more influential on every aspect of life. And now the federal government is able to do virtually anything it wants. And its laws are generally superior to the state laws. And so if you are in Lake Mead or you're at one of the national parks, etc., if you've been arrested for drunk driving or anything else, it seems like you were charged under the federal statutes. And
yes.
If you were convicted, that was a federal offense. So that's completely separate from any crime in any particular state, including California, Nevada, or wherever you were. So they don't
recognize
no,
the state.
They do. They recognize each other's laws, and that's called comity. Which means that, just for example, if something happens and there's a court order in Nevada, you can take that court order to California and it's still considered valid here as an order from another state. And that's the same thing with the federal government. In fact, the federal laws and federal court rulings and so forth are generally considered superior to the state rules. Now, for some reason, your conviction or whatever it is may not have shown up in California. And so I hope it's not affecting your insurance or whatever. And if that's the case, terrific.
It never did.
Good
My
for
question
you.
Is, like, we had to show up in front of the federal
the magistrate. Right.
And he goes, okay, sign up to a DUI class in California.
Okay.
And so when I got home, I'm like, okay. So I went to one out here, and they go, we can't sign you up because it's federal. And so I did, it took a year. I drove back to Vegas.
Right.
Went in front of the judge again, and I go, they won't sign me up. And he called the school, and all I had to do was like five classes. It wasn't 18 months, and I'm like, what the hell?
No, because remember, you were under federal law. It wasn't California law. So it's a whole different story.
But isn't, I mean, why, yeah, I'm just asking as a, I mean, why is it so separate? A DUI is a DUI, right?
Yes, that's true, but you have to look at jurisdiction, right? Now, it depends if you get a DUI in New York or in Washington or in different counties within the state, right? And here you got in a situation where you were convicted under federal law, which is separate because you were on a federal land area. It didn't go into your insurance. I'm happy for you. I think you caught a break, really.
Cool. And I'm like, but it did take a year to solve it.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to get a federal attorney.
Right.
Because I showed up to court and he's all, you want to take on the United States of America by yourself? And I'm like, whoa.
Not a good idea.
So I go, hold on. So I got an attorney in Vegas. But it seemed like the federal government, the attorneys, everybody, the money all stayed there. They appointed me a public defender, and I'm like, I don't qualify.
Right. Okay.
And
so
it's
you
like
ended
the
up
money
getting
just
it.
Stayed in that circle.
Right. Well, I think it worked out for you, to be honest. You end up getting a federal
offense,
not a state offense. You got yourself some kind of a federal lawyer. And you were subject to it seems like a less strict punishment than you would have gotten in a state. And that's because we have a federal system. And that's the beauty of living in the United States.
All right, Tom, good luck. Thank you, Adam. Once again, how can people get in touch with you?
Call me toll-free, 1-800-340-7320.
All right, Adam Sachs, if you missed any part of Adam's appearance, well, never fret. Of course, the show replays many, many times, but also there'll be another live opportunity to call Adam and get legal advice from him. It's coming up on Tuesday at 6 p.m. Pacific Time, 9 p.m. Eastern Time.
Tom Likas, the Internet's most listened to call-in show. 901-3000-TOM. This is the Tom Likas Show.
From the New Normal Newsroom, it's time once again for Likas 101 News for Guys. I'm Gary, he's Dino.
Everyone loves it too.
We're brought to you in part by Beer Magazine. Go to blowmeuptom.com, click on the Beer Magazine banner, get your Likas discount to a year's subscription to the now fully digital magazine devoted to beer.
Oh, yay, sir.
Beer Magazine, women really are drawn to men with dark, brooding looks. In order to satisfy a primitive need to get banged up.
Well, that explains our actor friend who has that all day long, and it seems to work out for him. Worked out for him playing that character on a TV show, too, popular among the ladies.
It is not the love of danger that attracts them, apparently, but a primitive desire to find a male who appears mentally strong, confident, and physically attractive.
Yeah, in order to have healthy chillers.
Healthy
chillers.
They call it the dark triad of personality traits. It's Machiavellianism, narcissism, and psychopathy.
Oh, that's him, exactly.
And psychopathy.
Yeah.
Women who want the chillers show a clear preference for these features because, like natural selection among animals, it indicates strong genes and good health, both mental and physical.
Yeah. They mentioned Travolta is in Danny Zuko in Grease. I'm going to toss that immediately.
No, you go for the bad guy.
But James Dean in
because
I get it.
When it comes to getting knocked up.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you want to have the strong chillers.
Healthy chillers.
There you go. New study shows half of black gay men yeah. will test positive for HIV.
This is pretty scary. If you're a brother out there that enjoys the poll, I mean, those are bad odds, man. That sucks.
Extremely bad.
Think about this. You're 50-50 shot at getting a little something-something. That's not good. So the brothers better wear a condom if they like to pole.
Break out the magnums. Yeah, my love. Patrick Dempsey and his formerly estranged wife, Jillian Fink Dempsey, are expected to formally withdraw divorce papers.
I got to tell you, I was looking at pictures of her on a boat with him.
Good.
Holy shit, dude.
Jillian Fink?
Yeah.
JF Day?
I do have a weakness for women named Jillian, but this is a case.
Oh, Jesus.
What about women named Fink?
How about that?
Uh-huh. When you see her in this little bikini, you're going to think twice.
I didn't even ask for it.
So don't. I don't want it. Unlike Gary, I don't want it.
Dude, it's not what you ask for. It's what you deserve.
I know.
A Texas teacher, 60, arrested for improper relationship with a 17-year-old student.
Yeah, it's a girl. Our friend Farley Ashford and Simpson, or Ashford Simon, is... off the job at Irving High School.
Just earned another one. What?
Nobody knows Ashford and Simpson, dude. Ashford and Timpson.
Oh.
That's got to be a double if the other one was just one. Anyway, Farley Ashford Simon is a 60-year-old friend. And the guys at Irving Police, they think that he banged around with this 17-year-old girl because... the mother of the 17-year-old girl was going through her daughter's cell phone and became suspicious that she was having a relationship with this 60-year-old dude. So she reported it to school officials. Oh, no.
Yeah, not good.
Oh, dude was probably having an awesome time, and that just went south fast.
Cosmopolitan has 15 things men don't understand about women. 15 things
That's
men
it?
Don't understand about women. Number one, why it feels so good to take off your bra at the end of the day. They liken it to putting your balls in a sling.
All right.
Getting them pinched. Why you'll say something is fine when it's not fine.
I agree with that. Yeah. That's been since the beginning of time.
Yeah.
How's it going? Fine.
Why catcalling is never cute or complimentary.
I get that because that's never worked in history, ever.
Why bras cost so much?
I've never wondered that.
Why buying jeans is like stepping into hell and all the jeans were made by the devil. That's pretty psychopathic.
Okay.
Why we have so many pillows on our couch and bed?
Rich girls got that shit going.
Why we need another shirt, dress, pair of shoes when we already have one that looks exactly like it?
Yeah, I'm sure that happens a lot.
Why it takes so long to put on eye makeup.
Yeah, I get that.
When you ask them to take a picture of you, you mean upwards of 10 so that they can choose from it.
Mm-hmm.
That period pain is very serious, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, we get that.
Yeah. Why we ask if we look fat in something.
Yeah.
Apparently the pressure to be thin is all-consuming sometimes, and because our self-esteem can fluctuate, and also because we're human beings.
And then you know this is written by a broad, which is good, IDK.
Why we think romantic comedies are seriously life-giving.
We do?
No, women.
Women.
Why we have 400 products in our bathroom, and the weight of all...
practicality buries us every time we open up our medicine cabinet. Welcomes.
Also, girl drama is on the list, and the difference between leggings, pantyhose, and tights. Legging... pantyhose and tights.
Apparently, 15 things
men don't understand.
Go on, I never pondered a lot of that shit.
Plenty more news for guys.com. That's going to do it for us. I'm Gary. He's Dino.
Healthy cheers.
Check out the podcast, GaryandDino.com.
Well, they are healthy cheers.
Is where you find it. Brand new show for you every single Friday. Just go to GaryandDino.com. From the New Normal Studios in Burbank, we're back to the Tom Likas Show right after this.
This is the New Normal.
I apologize for saying that to you.
That's the way it is.